Hello, everyone. In this session, I want to talk about one of the very real dangers we have to guard against as we face difficult times. This is offense, and specifically, becoming offended at God. I really struggled with this and came close to losing my friendship with God. The conditions of my imprisonment, the isolation, the loneliness, the fear that I would never be with my family again, all of these were difficult. But I understood intellectually that this was persecution. I didn't like it, but I understood it to some degree. What I could not understand was that for the 2 years in prison, I had no sense of God's presence. So I had expected that even in weakness and grief, I would have a supernatural sense of strength and joy. But I didn't have any sense of strength, and I had no joy. Instead, I was breaking down emotionally and physically, and I was going into spiritual crisis. For the last few years, I had drawn close to God, especially through an understanding of His Father's heart, the kind and gentle Father. But I couldn't discern my kind and gentle Father in any way. I couldn't see His hand intervening, and in fact, my situation kept getting worse and worse. I began to think of Him as a harsh taskmaster who sees me as expendable. Also, for years, I had run after intimacy with God and especially emphasized God's presence. And now, at the most desperate time in my life, He had removed any sense of presence. Objectively, I can say God did not abandon me, but it very much felt and looked that way, and it was agony to my soul. I wept bitterly many times. As I look back now, I can see that I had grace, but for the most part, it was an unfelt grace. And so my heart was deeply wounded. My deep disappointment led to doubts, to anger, to accusation. First, I questioned God's existence. Then I questioned His character. I knew He loved the whole world, but did He really love me, Andrew Brunson? Was He really faithful? Was He completely good and truthful? I wasn't so sure anymore. The offense in my heart was strangling my relationship with God. This is what Jesus was warning about when He said, "The love of many will grow cold." He was speaking to the people of God, saying that many are going to turn away because they become offended at God. When something bad happens, when there's a natural disaster, or even a terrible event that is directly the result of man's sin, like a mass shooting or a war, most people become angry at God. They blame Him. "God, if You're all powerful and loving, why don't You intervene? How can You let this happen?" So Jesus warned specifically that believers will become offended that God allows evil to metastasize. That is, the degree of wickedness that God will allow. And believers will also be offended at the judgments that God brings as a consequence of this wickedness. I think in the years ahead, we're going to see what happens when the leaders of a nation turn their backs on God. We as believers are not under judgment, but we are embedded in a nation that is entering a period of judgment. Believers will also be offended because of the intensity of persecution, the suffering from this. "God, how could You let this happen to me? I've been an obedient son." That's what I said. And I would add that in the midst of this, many believers may feel abandoned by God. As a result, many will be offended. And because of this offense in their hearts, the love of many will grow cold toward God. That's the direction I was heading. But then God intervened. At a very low point, I visualized the valley of testing. Now, God does not cause all our difficulties, but in the midst of our difficulties, He does test us. And this valley of testing was full of the skeletons, the dry bones of believers who had failed in their tests. I'm not talking about whether they go to heaven or not. At the least, these were believers who lost their friendship with God and were no longer fruitful. And God drove this into my heart. And I realized I was very close to failure, that I was very close to becoming one of those skeletons. And I made a decision. I knew that I could not do much to fight for my freedom, but I could fight for my relationship with God. I needed to fight for my relationship with God because I was very close to losing it. And I made a decision with my will, not with my emotions, because they were in turmoil. But I decided with my will, whatever you do or don't do, I will follow you. I said this to God, if you do not let me sense your presence, I will still follow you. If you don't speak to me, I will still follow you. If you don't show me your gentleness or your kindness, I will still follow you. If you leave me in prison, I will still follow you. I will follow you. I was setting aside my demands and any conditions I had placed on God. And I determined to turn my eyes toward God. This was such an important decision. At my weakest point, I couldn't turn my eyes very far. But turning them even one degree toward Him, rather than one degree away from Him, is all the difference in the world. Turning toward Him even one degree positioned me to receive grace from Him, and He started to rebuild me. Now, I had to make this decision again and again. Every time I was in a pit, every time there was a setback, every time I had doubts and questions, every one of those times I had a choice. And I chose to turn toward God rather than away from Him. I underline this because no matter how desperate your situation, no matter how deep the pit, you can turn toward Him. You must turn toward Him. It's a choice. Even one degree will make all the difference. Another thing that helped me was to visualize a lockbox. So I imagined taking my questions, my doubts, accusations, offense, and putting them into a box, and then I locked it securely. And I said, God, you and I are the only ones who are able to open this box. You can open it anytime you want if you want to deal with all of these things. But as for me, I make a decision with my will that I am not going to open this box. I won't entertain these doubts and questions any longer. I will not give them a place in my mind. And this was very important. This was a key thing. I said, I do not need to have answers to have a relationship with you. Now, after this, I did have questions and doubts, but I sent them to the lockbox. And this broke the stranglehold of doubt and offense on my heart so that I was able to begin to receive truth again. I had been focused on my questions, but at some point I became aware that God had questions for me. I was questioning God's love and His faithfulness, but it wasn't God's love and faithfulness that were being tested. They're constant, they don't change. It was my love, it was my faithfulness that was being tested. And God had questions for me. Andrew, will you continue to love me even when you don't feel or see my love? Andrew, will you be faithful to me even when you don't see my faithfulness? Here's the truth. God does test His children. And one of the tests is overcoming offense. I think of John the Baptist. Jesus was performing miracles, the kingdom was coming, but John is suffering in prison. And Jesus had power, but He didn't use it on John's behalf. When Jesus answered John's puzzled question, He said nothing about John's imprisonment. Instead, Jesus' message is, "Blessed is the one who is not offended by me." John the Baptist is in danger of being offended and entering a time of crisis. This is John, who is one of God's great servants. So Jesus says, "Be careful, John, that after coming this far, you don't fail. You don't turn away because of offense." And shortly after this, John was executed. God appears very willing to offend. There are many examples in the Bible. Most of Jesus' disciples rejected Him after He told them they would have to drink His blood, eat His flesh. Jesus could have gone after them. He could have explained further. He could have removed the offense, but He didn't. He let them go. He let the offended leave, and he didn't try to win them back. In contrast, another time, Jesus appears to insult a woman. He basically compares her to a dog, but she overcomes the offense. She will not leave, and she and her child are saved. So the heart response to him is critical. It seems that God is looking for those who will overcome offense, who will press through hurt, through doubt, confusion, and by doing so, prove their devotion and allegiance to Jesus, that in a sense, they're worthy of him. There are many things I don't understand, but I have to press through them. I think of Richard Wurmbrand, a Romanian pastor who suffered persecution in communist prisons. And he tells of believers who went insane in prison. I could relate to this because I was afraid at times that I would lose my sanity. But how does this fit into our theology of suffering? How does this fit with the verse, "My grace is sufficient for you"? Or, "I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me"? I know God could have given sufficient grace for those believers not to go insane. But he didn't. This is how Wurmbrand dealt with it. He said, "Their insanity is beautiful to God. They lost their minds because of their faithful commitment to Jesus. And this means it was a beautiful sacrifice. It's all been made right now. They're in heaven. But this demonstrates the human cost of suffering. When it comes to persecution, there are no guaranteed outcomes in this life. We don't know what the immediate results will be. We live with uncertainty. We don't know how, when, or even if our difficulties will end. And this uncertainty tests our hearts. Some people have said to me that the main narrative of my imprisonment was trust in God. Andrew, you were just trusting God. I'm not sure about this. Often when we talk about trust, we link it to an outcome. For example, some people sent messages through Noreen, "Andrew, just trust God." What they were really communicating was, "Andrew, trust that God is going to rescue you from prison." But I couldn't find any verse that said, "Andrew will get out of prison." Now, trust is very important to God. I'm not sure how well I understand it. So this is how I apply it in my life. I lean into the leadership of Jesus. I can say, "Jesus, I believe you're a good leader. I don't know what you're going to do. I don't know what difficulties you will take me into. But I can say that you're a good leader. You will accomplish what you want to in my heart, and you will take me through to your kingdom." And I lean into his leadership. I don't have to understand. I just have to lean into him. Isaiah 50 verse 10 became my theme verse in prison. So God is speaking to Israel in exile. "For the one who walks in darkness and has no light, let him trust in the name of the Lord and lean on his God." God could have said, "I'm going to send light right away. Look for the light. Expect the light." But he didn't. He said, "When you're in the dark, with no light, lean on me." Noreen has imagined a Job-like setting in which Satan says to God, "Take away Andrew's sense of your presence, and you'll see what happens." And God says, "Okay, I will, and you will see what happens." I think part of my testing was that I not have a sense of the presence of God, that I not have his voice. God wanted me to learn to stand in the dark, to lean into him, whatever my feelings, whatever my circumstances. People sometimes tell me about a difficulty they're going through, only to back off. "Oh, but mine is not as difficult as yours, Andrew." And I say, wait, hold on. My tests were enough to knock me out of friendship with God. And your tests are certainly enough to knock you out. We're tested by different means, but we're all tested in the same areas of the heart. Every one of us goes through times of difficulty. It could be persecution or some other crisis like a broken relationship, the loss of a loved one, an illness. And at some point, not in every difficulty, but at some point in your life, you're going to be in the dark. Most of you have been already, and you will be again in the future. And you may cry out, "Where are you, God? Where is Jesus? Where is my shepherd? Where is the lover of my soul? God, why are you silent during my most difficult hour? Why have you left me in darkness? Why have you not intervened?" I don't know. I still don't have answers to many things. And the reality is that I may never have them in this life. But in a sense, much more important than getting the answers is the simple truth that you must survive the test. You must remain faithful. Your devotion to God is being tested, and you must hold on to Him. What you do in these points of crisis will define your relationship with God. In closing, I want to encourage you to take seriously the danger of the offended heart, and especially so as we enter a more difficult time. You must not allow offense to take root in your heart. If you have offense now, tear it up by the roots, deal with it, and be on guard against it in the future. Decide, "I will not allow offense to strangle my relationship with God." Decide, "I will turn my eyes toward Jesus and not away." Create your own lockbox for questions, for doubts, offense, accusation, and lean into the leadership of Jesus. Lean into your beloved. He is committed to bringing you safely through to His kingdom. I hope you'll join me in the next session. I'll talk about the one thing that I think best prepared me for the pressures of persecution.